CEOs, civic leaders, entertainers, and entrepreneurs, they all have something in common: the drive, vision, and heart to achieve success. Steve Klein is a renowned business consultant, author, and host of Playmakers Talk Show. Each week, he introduces you to another fascinating personality who will inspire, educate, and motivate you to persevere and find your own success. And now, here is Steve Klein.
Oliver Wendell Holmes said, "The mind, once expanded to the dimensions of larger ideas, never returns to its original size." Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today are two playmakers who have expanded their minds. Our first playmaker runs a company that has set the standard for experience-driven application development, while our next playmaker grew a company from an unprofitable $80 million to a highly profitable $600 million organization. With us today is the CEO of a company that has made the Inc. 500 list for five consecutive years, while our next guest runs a boutique investment firm focused on value creation. These great playmakers are David Lancashire. David is CEO of Project 202, and Josh Payne. Josh is CEO or managing partner of Providence Interactive Capital, and we'll begin today's show with Josh. Josh Payne is the managing partner of Providence Interactive Capital, a boutique investment firm focused on value creation through active investment participation and the application of conscious capitalism principles. He's focused on helping entrepreneur-led companies achieve their growth potential through investments in knowledge and financial capital. Prior to joining Providence, Josh was the president and CEO of CheapCaribbean.com. Under Josh's leadership, CheapCaribbean.com grew from an unprofitable $80 million company to a highly profitable $600 million organization. Well, Josh, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thanks, Steve. It's great to be here.
Well, you have a knack for turning companies around, but before we talk about that, what makes Providence Interactive Capital different from the competition?
You know, I think the biggest differentiator is the background. It's the people, right? And so as managing partner, what's really important to me is that we have on staff the kind of people that have the ability to go in and make an impact in the organization. So said another way, we are CEOs. We're by CEOs. We're for CEOs. We all have an operational background. And it's because of that operational background, being the person that that knows what it's like to sign the front of the paycheck, that's actually becoming the capital partner for the organizations that we invest in. So
we were talking prior to the show started with our other guest, which I'll introduce in a moment. But it, from what I took from the conversation you were having, is you are less of the initial idea person and more of taking that initial idea and making it grow. How do you do that?
Well, I don't know why I can't have the idea. I wish I could, but I'm just not the idea guy. But my brain just works in such a way that I can take anything. If I can make 100, 1,000, that's not hard. I just see in terms of structures and process and scalability, and that's something I've always been able to do everywhere I've been a part of. So what I'm now choosing to do with the next trajectory of my life is, instead of being the guy, instead of being the CEO that goes in there and actually does the turnaround, is coming alongside the CEOs, the founders, the entrepreneurs, the management team, and imputing to them, creating value for them, both with capital as well as intellectual property, so that they can fuel their next stage of future growth.
So it sounds like you're becoming a partner to that client you're working with.
That's exactly right.
Not on staff technically, but you are helping them grow and develop the business.
Exactly right. So my big everyone has their things that they key on. And what I key in on is alignment. And what is extremely important to me, both personally as well as professionally, is that there is alignment. And for me, I found that the best way to get a great return for myself, for the shareholders, is to be aligned with senior management, and then to help ensure that senior management is aligned with the rest of their stakeholders. It's one of the founding principles of conscious capitalism. It's something I believe in very implicitly. It's something I've always practiced, and yet through the organization of conscious capitalism, it's gained clarity. And now there's an entire movement of other people that say, hey, you know what? The way that we treat our stakeholders matters, and the ability to balance our business approach in a way that doesn't diminish any stakeholder but rises all of the stakeholders to an elevated level is the way to run a profitable company in this day and age.
What I see you doing is going in, working with a client, getting into their head, finding out who all the stakeholders are, and pulling them together, because in many cases, I'm willing to bet a lot of the companies you're working with are a little fractured. They're not all together, and you're pulling that together.
Well, so what you see in many cases, although we all like to believe that we're unique, and every company I've run, I thought I'm unique, and it turns out I wasn't very unique. But when you're in a fast-paced, high-growth environment, you go as fast as you can. And inevitably, as you're growing and adding on structures, there are fractures. Usually the biggest fracture that I see is things become implicit versus explicit. So you walk into an organization and they may be $80 million organization, right? They've gone from nothing to $80 million very quickly, and they just do things a certain way. And that's wonderful. But when you go from $80 million in one location to $600 million and multiple locations, that breaks down. And it breaks down because it's implicit and it's not explicit. And so a large part of what we do is go in, work with the senior management, and say, let's get really explicit. And it starts with the vision, the values, and the purpose of the organization. Because if you can get everyone singing the same song and you can get the culture of the organization aligned, you have the ability to take that, to scale it, and operate with purpose.
Which are the tenets of conscious capitalism. We're speaking with Josh Payne. Josh is managing partner for Providence Interactive Capital, and the website is providenceinteractive.com. Well, you touched on what you did with Cheap Caribbean. You went from $80 million to $600 million. That's a 7.5 times increase. How did you do that? And this is really a microcosm of what you're doing for other companies now, too. How did you come in and do that for them?
A lot of coffee. No.
Yeah, I'm sure that helped.
There was not a lot of sleep involved, but that's okay. I came in and I've found that I'm really good when I'm dealing with facts. The problem is we all tell stories to ourselves. And so the first thing I had to do was really understand what is going on and where are all the stakeholders in the mix, right? Because if you can create an environment where you're working for all the stakeholders and you're all aligned in terms of where you're trying to get to, then you build an ecosystem where they actually you're not fighting your vendors, you're not fighting your employees, you're not fighting your communities. They're actually helping you be successful, right? And so really it was just, initially there's a deep dive, a discovery of where are we, what's going on, who do we have to play? And then you get everyone singing the same song, right? And then you all commit to the same purpose and you're all united by the same vision, values, and purpose. And it was through just some basic principles of telling the truth that we began to take the organization and to grow and do the next right thing. And another key thing that I've found, especially in the digital world, is giving up control. So organizations in the past, it seems like they were successful because they held control. And the wave of the future is a lot to do with giving up control. So instead of you having to be the smart guy and say, here's what the customer wants, you have to create a framework for the customer to play in. However, it's the customer that's going to tell you what they need. Your job as an organization is to be responsive to that demand and serve your customer and serve them well. So really, we got really good at listening and really good at telling the truth and really clear on our values, which were honesty, integrity, kindness, and excellence. Something so basic made a huge difference for our organization.
Interesting how that works. Well, you are a CPA by training.
I'm a recovering CPA.
CPA. One thing I've noticed over the last few months here on Playmakers Talk Show, we've had a tremendous amount of CPAs that started out as an accountant, moved into CFO, and then turned over, then ran the company as CEO. But how has that CPA training, how has that helped you with what you're doing?
You know, the language of business is numbers, right? And so I encounter a number of entrepreneurs that are intrinsically very good at sales, very passionate people, and yet the chemical composition of every organization is the numbers, right? That's the report card. That's how we tell the story. And if the numbers are driving the business, that's a mistake. But if the numbers are omitted, that's a mistake as well. So, I've found that I'm a very detail-oriented guy, despite being, a little ADD from time to time, or my wife would say all the time. I'm very good at the details. And so understanding those, creating dashboards, and enforcing accountability with the company, and the numbers will help you get accountability as a way to success.
So you're working with companies that really may not be focusing as much as they are on the numbers. But it sounds like what you're doing, you're taking that numbers, that's the base, and you're growing from there. You're coming up with the ideas to help take those specifics, those numbers, those facts,
yes,
and build them.
That's exactly right. Yeah. The numbers are a platform, right? So it's foundational, and you can't step away from them. But Where companies get in trouble is when they take either extreme, right? Either sales cures all ails, and so forget everything else, or else, hey, let's let the numbers drive it. So there's got to be a marrying up of operations along with the actual factual numbers. So those two have to talk.
Well, you've won a few awards, too. You were a finalist for the Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year Award. You're an Aggie 100 winner. I'm going to come back to that. You're also recipient of the 40 Under 40 in the Philadelphia Business Journal. But what is the Aggie 100?
So the Aggie 100, I just found out about this. That's the great thing. When you hire really good PR people, they all of a sudden start allowing you to show up places. We kind of operate in silent for a long time. But I'm an Aggie. I'm a Fight Tech Aggie class of 1999. Got my undergraduate and master's there and love the school. And when we came back, they called me and said, hey, you know, you're eligible for these awards we give out to the top 100 fastest growing Aggie-led companies in the world are featured on this list. So all you have to do is apply. So we applied and immediately started winning those awards. That was a lot of fun.
Now, was that with Cheap Caribbean?
That was with Cheap Caribbean. That's right.
And it's obvious that you took a lot of what you did there. It sounds like you've now put into Providence Interactive Capital. Right. This is really what the business plan is, going in, seeing what a company is doing, and helping that vision become more focused so you can multiply what they're doing, like, as I said, 7.5 times with Cheap Caribbean. So it sounds like what you're doing for them creates their company.
That's exactly right. Well, I mean, it certainly helps it evolve. So we all have to grow and evolve and adapt. And we don't have enough time to make all the mistakes ourselves. So I've got a good West Texas friend. He goes, Payne, he always calls me Payne, because I don't want you to have to step in all the cow patties yourself. So let's learn from other people. And I guess I try to help other CEOs and management teams see some of the mistakes that I've fled. I believe in servant leadership. I don't ever lead with my strengths. I lead with my weaknesses. And fortunately, I've made a lot of mistakes. So I have the opportunity, I think, to help other people course correct before they step in the proverbial cow patty.
Who is your ideal client?
You know, we deal with a lot of different organizations. The path that I see most often is the entrepreneurial-led organization that has grown themselves, where the CEO and management team have unpacked their tools, they've grown to a certain point, and then they've hit that wall. And then they're stuck going, well, what do I do now? Do I make this a lifestyle company? Do I sell it while we're still growing, but I see the future, the trend starting to bend down? Like, what do I do? Or do I sell my soul to private equity? And not that they're all bad. I know some great people in the private equity space, but the kind of capital matters, right? And so what I like to do is come into those organizations and say, look, here's another option. Yes, I understand you need capital, but financial numbers are not a leading indicator. They're a lagging indicator. So normally I look at those, I find the issue, and then I help them to solve for that and then come alongside them and help them implement growth strategies to take their company to the next level.
Well, tell everybody where they can find out more about you and your company.
So if you go to our website, providenceinteractive.com. You can find out more about what we're doing in this space.
Fantastic. Josh, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you, Steve.
Josh Payne is managing partner for Providence Interactive Capital. Don't go away. We have more. We're going to talk to the CEO of Project 202. His name is David Lancashire. We'll be back with David right after this.
Operation Kindness is the oldest and largest no-kill animal shelter here in North Texas. Each day, its staff and volunteers care for an average of 300 homeless dogs and cats in its shelter in Carrollton, plus 100 more animals living in foster homes throughout the Metroplex. Learn how you can adopt, donate, or volunteer with this nonprofit group by visiting their website at operationkindness.org or by calling 972-418-7297. operationkindness.org.
Their names are Vivian, Bryce, Zoe, and Joshua, ages 5 to 12. They are part of a very exclusive club that neither they nor their families want to belong. They've all been diagnosed with some form of pediatric cancer. Each year in DFW, hundreds of families hear the dreaded words, "Your child has cancer." Wipe Out Kids Cancer helps families cope and support researchers looking for a cure. Our mission is simple: to work relentlessly for the day when all children are living cancer-free. Learn more at wokc.org.
And welcome back to Playmakers Talk Show. This segment, we're going to speak with David Lancashire. David is the chairman and CEO of a company called Project 202, and that's Project with a K. He leads a company that sets the standard for experience-driven application development. With headquarters in Dallas and offices in Austin and Seattle, Project 202 is the world leader in applying design research to the development of mobile, cloud, web, and workplace software. The company is actively changing the way people interact with technology around the world. Now, renowned industry analyst firm Gartner noted, they said the perspectives and processes Project 202 is focusing on will, over time, become standard operating procedure for any application development project. We're going to talk more about that in a moment. Some of the clients that Project 202 works with are Samsung, eBay, Neiman Marcus, PayPal, Mercedes-Benz, and Southwest Airlines. And under David's leadership, Project 202 has made the Inc. 500 list for five consecutive years, ranking 161st in 2013 with an impressive growth rate of, listen to this, 2,435%. Well, David, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be here.
Very impressive numbers. We're going to talk about that in a moment. But before we get there, there are millions of apps available out there to anybody that wants them. There's thousands of application development firms. How does Project 202 differentiate itself from other application development firms?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the answer really is about seeing that what you're delivering is not a technology, but it's actually an experience for a real human being. Different types of users, different types of consumers, different types of customers, whatever type of user that is. And so our whole reason for being is to improve those experiences that people are having when they interact with technology. And so we can go deeper into sort of the methodologies and approaches we take for that, but the key difference is that we're doing very specific things to make sure that those experiences are improved. And we feel like the market as a whole has not woken up to the fact that there are really programmatic and trustworthy ways to go about figuring out what these experience changes need to be so that big corporations across the world can improve the customer experience. And so technology now is becoming, you know, so pervasive, and the number of touch points in a customer experience for a big corporation are so many that what we're doing is kind of at the epicenter now of the change that's happening. So we differentiate ourselves purely around the idea of changing that experience and the way we go about doing that. And there's some myths out there about how you do that, and I'd like to try and dispel some of those today as well.
We can do that. You've used the word experience a number of times, and we were talking about this before the show started. This goes back to what I mentioned about Gartner, is that over time, what you're doing is going to become the operating standard for application development project. So let's talk about that. You talked about some myths, but also talk about what you're doing to develop that experience for your clients.
Right. Well, we're touching on the myths quickly. You know, the first thing that people think is, well, let me go hire myself an experience expert, some kind of UX designer, and they can sprinkle some magic on my project or my product, and things are going to be great. And I'm not saying that you might not find your very own Steve Jobs to join your organization and get lucky. But what about the companies that have tried that and they failed, or they want something more predictable and trustworthy than that? So that's one of the myths that I want to dispel and talk about how we address that. And the second one is that, well, let me just go get closer to my customer. Let me just go ask them what they want. Let's just go talk directly to them. And with the lack of connection with talking to the customer directly, of course, we encourage that. But the problem with us as human beings is when people ask us what we want, it's sometimes very, very difficult to articulate that. So I can usually tell you what I don't want when somebody shows it to me, but to really think about what I want, that means I have to be thinking about all the little things I'm doing every day, all those things that are just habit that I may not mention to you. And I also may have to be able to envision a future that I'm not used to. There's a famous quote attributed to Ford about, you know, asking if he'd asked customers what they'd want, it would have been a faster horse because their reference point was to a horse when he was envisioning the car. And likewise, so do I envision an airplane when I'm riding on a horse? No, probably not. But so those are a couple of the key myths. It's like, hey, let's hire a UX magician or let's go talk directly to our users. And so what is the way that one can approach this in a programmatic way? Well, that is, we can use elements that have been around from psychology and anthropology that are about the observation of people in context and asking questions based on seeing what they're doing. So very, very intelligent and context-specific questions. That's really kind of the essence of it. There's also another point that people are in different emotional states. So very quick story. I went to East Germany once before the wall came down, and I was sitting on this train journey with a very nice older lady who visited her family in the West, and I was trying my best with my German, but she's a super friendly lady, chatting all the way. We get to the border, and on gets this the police to come and check your IDs and passports and so forth, and she whispered to me, she goes, die Blauen," which basically means the men in blue, their nickname for the police that would come on at that time. And from that moment forward, as we went from the border all the way into Berlin, her entire persona changed. She froze, and we barely said a few words after that, and yet I felt like we were friends after the first half. So I just use that story as just people's emotional state can be completely different at different times. And what's been great about some of the experiences we've had with applications, maybe your favorite application, people like Pinterest, they like Uber, they, whatever it is, the experience that said, wow, I'm having fun using this particular technology, is that there's almost an emotional connection point as well. So what we're talking about here is an opportunity to really get at the true aspirations of what a user or customer would really ideally like to have, how we can connect with them at a potentially an emotional connection point, which is by understanding their actual state of mind when they're doing certain things where they might be interacting with technology. And so these are a lot more sophisticated things. And when you consider that just a decade ago, I was running a company that's in a similar space, and we built over $100 million worth of software applications, but we were kept at such a distance from the user, the end user, the customer of the system. We used iterative incremental, risk-based project management to deliver all of our systems. Our clients were super happy. We did a lot of business. They came back for more. But there was this sense that we were treading on eggshells if we were going to go get a little closer to the customer and talk to them. And so this is a profound shift. It's something we should all really welcome. But the key is, we want businesses across the world to realize there are real programs available today that they can trust in, and that can actually revolutionize the experience they're delivering to their customers. And that's what we want to make people realize. There's an investment they've got to make. This doesn't come just by magic. You don't sprinkle this magic fairy dust on the project and it works. It's about getting close to that customer. So that's where we start to dive into design research and the observation of people in context. And we have a whole bunch of sophisticated processes that we use in that. But think of it, in summary, as getting a clearer, deeper understanding of a specific user type of the technology that you're trying to deliver.
Interesting, with the behavioral science and psychology and the anthropology that goes into all that. We're speaking with David Lancashire. David is chairman and CEO of Project 202. Their website is Project, and that's with a K, P-R-O-J-E-K-T, 202.com. Switching a little bit, you have a leadership style at Project 202 that fosters a likable workplace culture. What is that?
Well, I would like to think that the essence of that is about empowering people. So when having built a company before in a similar space and observed all these changes that are going on in the industry and positioning us for success going forward, one of the things that was in my heart was that I wanted to give other people a chance to be very successful in ways that I had been in the past. And so that same sense or leadership style pervades our organization now. So we actually set up each new geographic location. Today we're in Austin, Dallas, and Seattle, and we're looking at several new locations across America right now. But when we set up a new office, we set it up as a separate subsidiary of the main company and create an entire ownership stake for the management team that's going to be building that particular office. And while that's sort of a symbol of what I'm talking about, what we really try to do is empower those teams to be successful in their geography and to have all the elements that they need for success, and that the corporate team is there really to remove obstacles rather than be there to actually help make that team successful. So they should be able to succeed on their own, but we're here if there is an obstacle. So I really feel like the environment comes from, one, the space that we're in. We genuinely are passionate about helping people have better experiences. So the reason you go to work every day is kind of a fun reason. But coupled with that is that our second philosophy is to empower the members of the team to really go about business in their own way and to subdivide every area of our business into small businesses so that people are running their own thing. And you know, many companies have done that successfully in the past, but I really, really subscribe to that point of view.
Interesting psychology in the culture of the company and the culture of what you do for your clients. Tell everybody one more time how they can get a hold of you and the company.
The best way would be to go to project202.com. That's project with a K.
That's, and a matter of fact, I would recommend going there. There's a number of videos, one specifically with David that is a longer of the three or four that are on there. It's excellent to find out more about Project 202. David, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show.
My pleasure.
We have had a tremendous show today. Thank you very much for joining us. You can join us at PlaymakersTalkShow.com, where you can get all of our replays and past episodes. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com. We're going to be back next week with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join him again next Friday at 3 p.m. for another sit-down with DFW's most interesting Playmakers.